Okay, so we talked.
You asked me a question after that.
Yes, you told us about the Ku Klux Klan burning the cross pretty soon after you got back. How soon did you think?
The day after we got back.
Day after. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, of course, in your behalf. It wasn't for your benefit.
Oh, no, it was across the... See, we lived on one side of the river, and the hills were across the river, and that's where the cross was burned.
Well, my question to you when the tape went off was, how did that feel? Tell us your feelings when you saw that cross burning.
It was obviously an absolutely new experience. And it was really pretty dreadful. I knew that those things existed, of course, but having lived in a large city, you don't necessarily come in contact with them. In a small community, it's quite different.
What happened? I mean, physically,
nothing
what happened?
No.
Did the police go?
I don't know.
Did anything ever occur?
I don't really know. I don't really know what happened.
But that was your introduction to Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you got introduced the night after you got back by the burning of a cross. And did you immediately go into the store to help your husband?
I never went into the store. My husband was in partnership with another man. And my mother had spent her life in my father's business. And I had decided quietly in my own mind that I would never do it. I did go in the store over the years, but helped strictly on a temporary basis, on a busy night or a busy week, like Christmas or Mother's Day or something. But I never made a career of going to business.
Okay, so essentially then we would call you a housewife of Elizabeth. All right. Tell us what life as a housewife in Elizabeth is like.
Well, I can tell you that in one sentence. When I was graduated 25 years from the University of Chicago, I sent them a very handsome contribution to the alumni fund because I thought I owed it to them. I never could have existed in a little place like Elizabeth. It's a beautiful town. I made some old friendships, don't misunderstand me. But it was extremely limited. We didn't even have a library. And I never could have existed except with what I always like to consider my inner resources.
But you made contact in McKeesport, which was the next
We joined the temple in McKeesport, which was about 7 miles away. We belonged to the temple there. My children were both confirmed there. Richard was bar mitzvah there. And we made wonderful friends. We were really part of that community socially.
Were you active in the temple?
No.
What temple was it?
Temple B'nai Israel.
Temple B'nai Israel. And now that you discussed that your children were confirmed there and your son was bar mitzvah there, tell us, how many children did you have?
Two.
What were their names, and what are their names, and what...
They're both dead, Marion and Richard.
Two children.
In fact, today is Marion's birthday.
Can you tell us a little bit about your children? I mean, would you like to elaborate for us? We'd like very much to hear about them.
Well, Richard was a busy little boy. And in fact, we were talking about him yesterday because I had been watching Mr. Rogers when he was telling the parents how to discipline children. Were you watching that on the television one night last week? Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us the date of your son's birth? The date of your son's birth and death.
He was born March 19th, 1930. And he died September 28th, 1972.
For 10 years, so long. Okay.
That's a devastating piece of information.
Well, I've got lots of devastating pieces of information.
To live a life, that's what happened. Yeah. So he was a busy youngster.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer. What kind of activities did he discover when he was a little boy?
Well, he you till I get dust and wash the floors and bake the pies.
Oh, good. He was mother's helper. And where did he go to school?
Graduated from Cornell and from the Cornell Law School. Went to Massanutten Military Academy.
Massanutten. I haven't heard that for a long time. My brother went to
Massanutten.
I don't think so. No, I don't think it does. But he did
spell it. Massanutten,
I think.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. My brother went to Massanutten Academy. And it was generally thought to be a very fine school. Was your son satisfied there?
May I ask you what years he was there?
My brother is in his 40s, so he would.
He wouldn't. He'd be too young.
No, no, he would have.
He would be over 50. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What do you ask me?
I asked you if he was happy at Massanutten.
Yes and no. I made a bad mistake with Richard. I didn't tell him why I sent him there.
Why did you?
Well, first I'll have to tell you why that disturbed him. Most of the boys there were because they were hard to handle at home or because there was trouble of some kind in their homes, marital problems or whatever.
What about poor students?
In some cases, not so
much.
But
not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
No.
Oh,
no.
Richard was
but
right.
Yeah,
but
no, but I mean, he was not disturbed by that. He was disturbed by the social angle of it. And he couldn't figure, he didn't figure that he fit in either of those categories.
Mm-hmm.
I sent him to school because, oh gee, is this going to get published?
Probably not. Probably not. We'll delete it anyhow.
I sent him to Massanutten because I didn't like the schools in Elizabeth.
That's not such a terrible thing to say.
Mm-hmm. It was terrible with me because I was the president of the Parent Teacher Association.
Oh.
But I didn't think the school there was good enough for him.
Not up to your standards.
Yes. And because and because I was active in the school system, I didn't feel I could rightfully send him to just a private school.
Mm-hmm.
So we picked the military academy, mm-hmm. and I made the mistake of not discussing it with him. Because he.
He was unhappy.
He thought
with
he
it.
Was. He was. He. His reasons were different than the real reasons.
He knew, of course, that he wasn't being disciplined by his mom.
That's why he couldn't see himself there.
Because he didn't
because
need
he
discipline.
Because he didn't fit into what he considered the categories that the other boys fell into. He couldn't see what he was doing there, but he did very well.
I'm sure
he was the commander of the band. He won several scholastic prizes. In fact, I was thinking of one of them the other day because when he graduated, the band director wanted to give him the band medal. And the head of the school says, he's already getting the history and the English medals. Find somebody else to give the band medal to. And the bandmaster stood up to the headmaster and says, you find somebody else to give the English and history medals to.
So he achieved the band medal and academic medals as well.
He was a good student and a...
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate a little bit upon his existence as a man? Did he marry as he...
He married a classmate from Cornell. He went on to law school. Well, they graduated. He went on to law school, and she went to work. She took her master's. And then the second year she went, she was a research assistant at the University of Maine. And at the end of that period, they were married. They went back to Cornell for his last year at law school, and she worked in the research laboratories there.
Married in his last year?
The summer preceding his last year at law school. Then he was graduated and came here afterwards, took the bar exam, lived and practiced here.
Practiced in Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
What firm?
Baskin, Borman, Sachs, Gunnelman, and Craig.
Oh my goodness. All right, in the Baskin firm. We'll put it that way.
I think that firm is broken up now. I don't think they
It's Baskin and Sears now.
Yeah, it's Baskin and Sears. That's true. Mm-hmm. So he practiced in Pittsburgh, and did he and your daughter-in-law, Kim, have children?
I have two children, two sons, Richard Jr. and Adam.
Richard Jr. and Adam.
When Richard was a little boy, he was the only little boy I ever, the only child I ever knew who liked his own name. And he always used to say, when I have a little boy, I'm going to name him Richard.
Oh,
nice. So when his wife is pregnant, I reminded him of that, and he says, well, I am. How it got to be Richard Jr.
That's great. That's
we called him Chip, but his name, I asked him once that he knew what his name is.
Called Chip. How about that? That's a nice little nickname. So you're lucky that you have two marvelous grandsons from this marriage.
Which is the one, Adam.
Adam.
And how old are these youngsters right now?
18 and 22.
Richard is 18?
No, 22.
Oh, Richard is 22 years at this date.
And about to graduate from Boston University.
Oh, how nice. And Adam is now
a freshman at Pitt.
18 years at this time. Oh, how fortunate for you. And of course, you must be quite close to them. When did their father die?
September 28, 1972.
Can you elaborate on that? Would you like to? How do you feel about
There's
that?
There's nothing to elaborate. He died very suddenly.
Of what?
To tell you the truth, I don't exactly know. It must have been a heart involvement of some kind. I really can't answer that.
Mm-hmm. This must have been tough times for you.
Yes.
I can appreciate that because I too have had that problem to deal with. Fanny, you've dealt with it very well and put yourself back in order. It must have taken quite some time.
I told you I was a philosopher.
Yes, and pretty tough at that. Pretty tough at that.
I refuse to worry about things you can't change.
Now, there's a good piece of philosophy. If you can't change it, don't push it. What about your daughter? Tell us a little about your daughter.
My daughter was never a very well child. She had congenital heart disease. And later developed multiple sclerosis. She was married and became very ill.
How long after her marriage?
I think they were married 6 years or whatever, 7 years. And turned out to be a ruptured appendix, and she died of peritonitis.
When?
Yeah, what is
March 6, 1971.
3/6 of 71. Well, you mean to tell me you lost your two children in the space of a year?
Your
time?
Name.
Mm-hmm. When was she born?
June 7, 1934.
Yeah.
So she was
that
a young
was
woman.
The year that was. Huh?
And did your daughter have children?
No.
So that and are you still in contact with your son-in-law?
No.
No, you don't keep up with him.
He just disappeared.
Mm.
He lived with us until after Richard died, and lived with us for a short time afterwards, and went for himself. And we just see him occasionally, but I don't even know where he is. Mm-hmm.
And of course, you're still very close with your daughter-in-law.
I don't know how I'd live without her.
Yes, she remains then your only living child. And her name is Tim. You call her Tim.
Her name is Eleanor.
And she is Eleanor Schwartz, but nicknamed Tim. Tim and Chip. Nice nicknames.
Well, her maiden name had been Thim, T-H-I-M.
Oh.
And some teacher began calling her Tim years ago, and that name stuck with her all the time.
Isn't that funny?
Isn't that funny? That's really something. Well, obviously, you had a rather full life as a young married woman in Elizabeth and spent some good years there and produced out of your wonderful marriage with your husband two children. Your husband is no longer alive?
Mm-mm.
When did your husband die?
March 28, 1979.
And at the time, were you living in Pittsburgh or Elizabeth? I mean,
oh,
when did you get to Pittsburgh?
Oh.
We can move to Pittsburgh in 1952.
Oh, you did. Tell us about that. You moved from Elizabeth to Pittsburgh.
It was very simple. We got tired of being isolated from communal and cultural things, and we just decided we'd move.
Why you couldn't be close to it?
We had enough. My husband never minded commuting. He went every day.
In other words, he kept his store.
He kept his store, but he liked the things we were able to do every bit as much as I did, and it was a good move for us.
How long did it take him to commute, incidentally? This is a question aside. How long did it take him to go from here to Elizabeth?
Oh, around 3/4 of an hour, depending on the time of day and so on. But in the last many several years, he got so he didn't go to open or stay to close or things of that sort. He had good help.
He never retired, though.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well,
he kept his business
till
what time?
He sold the business to the man who worked for us, and he worked 2 or 3 days a week. And then that petered out, and he didn't go at all.
And can you remember times? I mean, can you give us an idea about what year that was? You say he died in 79. How long before his death did he quit?
I think he retired in 69.
Oh, so he was retired and living in Pittsburgh for perhaps 10 years. You lived as a retired couple in Pittsburgh. Now, that's very interesting. During those years, did you find it pleasant and easy living then? Where did you reside when you lived in Pittsburgh?
We had a house on Shadyside Lane. We only lived in one house here, didn't we, Phil?
Right. You moved in.
And a lovely house it is. I happen to know the location.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful house.
It is a nice house. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's comfortable and handy and attractive.
So you lived all the while in Shadyside Lane. And when did you give up that home?
Well, my husband died in March, and I moved here in June.
All right. You sold that in June of 79. Mm-hmm. So you've been living in this apartment now for several years, 3 years
It'll
or so.
It'll be 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And you're happy and comfortable
there?
That's wonderful. You've given us some wonderful background about your school days and so forth. Life in the city of Pittsburgh, now that we've brought you up to Pittsburgh in our historical interview, and now that we come
to
that.
I'd like to say one more thing about Elizabeth.
Please do.
I was active in affairs there. I was active in the parent teachers and the Eastern Star, made a lot of friends. And together with the women of Clare and the women of Elizabeth formed the Hadassah chapter, in which we were all, well, when you're a small chapter, everybody has to participate.
What was it called?
Clare and Elizabeth chapter.
Okay. And you were real active in that?
Yes, sir.
What did you do?
Raised money, had meetings, taught the children. My friend formed the Sunday school in the synagogue in Clareton.
You did
a lot of work. I wasn't active in the Sunday school. My friend did that. Perhaps some of you know Dr. Jerry Aarons. He was one of her confirmants.
Joe and Will lived there.
Hmm?
Joe and Will lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And who was your friend?
Rose Larmer.
Oh.
Well, you know, there's a question here that would ordinarily throw somebody else, but I don't think it would you.
Oh, dear. You sure you want to ask me?
Yes, I'm sure I want to ask you because you're a lady who can answer it. We're asking for a contrast in your mind, the feeling that you have with regard to contrasting life in the city of Pittsburgh as opposed to life abroad, elsewhere. Now, since you lived in Chicago and you lived in Cicero and you lived in Elizabeth, perhaps you have a contrast that you might like to give us for the record. How does Pittsburgh stack up?
I really can't answer that. I've lived here too long. I'm here 56 years. I live here longer than you have.
Well, I suspect you have.
So I don't. That's really not a fair question.
All right. But you would say
you
it
have
seems
a preference.
To me.
Well, to tell you the truth, I love Pittsburgh.
Loves it.
Yes.
Okay.
And I've traveled considerably. And I find that when I go other places, I find that I like the cities that are about the size of Pittsburgh better than I like the great big ones.
So Pittsburgh to you is a big, small town.
Mm-hmm.
And you say you've lived in Pittsburgh for 50 years?
Well, 56. In this area, yes.
That's a good long time. If you were asked if Pittsburgh has changed any, would you have some changes you might like to talk about?
I think there's a lot of changes here. I think culturally we've come a terrific distance in those 50 years.
To name a few, can you?
Well, I don't remember the symphony back that long, but I think it was here. But there was very little else. There was no dance. There was no civic light opera. There was very little, as far as I can remember, the only athletic competition of any kind in Pittsburgh was only baseball. It seems to me in every field.
Every field then has prospered and grown?
I would think so.
And life generally is pretty pleasant for you in Pittsburgh.
I love it here.
What do you think of life as regards neighborhoods, social life, for example, what the neighborhoods are now as opposed to then?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. What I'd like to do now, Fan, is get to the work that you're doing presently, because I think you do lovely pieces of work, at least some of them that I know about. Can you elaborate
on them all?
Well, I don't know if I know them all. What I'd like to ask you about specifically is the kind of community activities in which you're engaged presently. You're supposed to be active in Elizabeth.
I've spent a long time being active in communal and organization affairs. I've grown away from that. I now like eyeball contact.
I see.
And, or ear to ear, perhaps I should say, since I go to Call for Action once a week. And I love that.
Tell us about Call for Action.
Well, I think it's useful and certainly interesting and varied. We spend 2 hours on the phone and 4 hours doing our work that's connected with those calls. What are they?
Yes. Describe them.
Well, really, there isn't any limit. I've had people who can't pay their gas bills. I've had women who like to have their husbands back after they've left them in anger. I've had people inquire what they should do when they discover that they have venereal diseases. I've had women who call me and complain because they see cockroaches in the buses. There's no limit.
A myriad of problems. You would say then, if one were to unify what you do and give it a title, would we say that you're a telephone counselor?
Well, we try not to give advice. We try to give information. We try to make that
distinction.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We try to do it. Listen, you can't talk to people on a personal basis without injecting your person in it. But we try to keep it to a minimum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, when I say counseling, I mean putting people in touch with other people, the right
other
people.
Well, that's what we do. For example, when I did have the woman, and she's a classic case as far as I'm concerned, who called me to say her husband left her. I couldn't find out what she wanted. Usually people call because they can't pay their gas bill, the rent is due, and so on. I kept asking her, and nothing was coming. All of a sudden, I said to her, "Do you want him back?" And she said, "Yes," and she started to cry.
What did you advise?
Well, I told her that I started out by saying, "Why don't you speak to your clergyman?" That's always where we like to begin. Her husband doesn't go to church. What about your husband's brothers? He doesn't get along with them. How about your brothers? He doesn't get along with them. How about his friends? His friends are what caused all the trouble. He'd been going out too much, and I said to him one night, if you go out with them, you don't need to come back, and he didn't come back.
And it backfired on her.
Anyway, I got her some marriage counseling through the mental health and mental retardation. And I called up a couple of weeks ago to see how things were going, and our young son answered, and I asked him how old he was. He said, 17. His mother isn't home. How old are you? He says, I'm 17. Well, I decided he certainly knew the score, so I said to him, has your father come back? He says, no, but they're going to the marriage counselor tonight.
So you made inroads.
So she originally had said to me, he will never go to the marriage counselor, when I gave her the original advice. And I said, then you have to go without him. She said, well, what good will that do? I said, you've got to start somewhere. You got to begin to begin. So,
good advice, as it were.
He said, but they're going to the marriage counselor tonight.
Nice.
So I hope that worked out.
Well, obviously, you're doing a very nice piece of work there, and it must be very satisfying.
Very
satisfying.
I'm
sure.
Very rewarding. And
sometimes
very frustrating. What
station is this?
KDKA.
KDKA, that's what I thought.
Yeah, call for action is at KDKA, and you sit at the little carousel, of course, and take your calls.
Not carousel,
your
carol.
The carol, excuse me. You sit at your carol and do your work and have your caseload, as it were. What about ombudsmanship? I know that
we do a lot of that.
A great deal of that goes on. Do you have any stories you can relate to us about some of your interceding clients?
Well, the one that comes to my mind is one I was thinking about this morning. I had a man who called me to say that he owned a piece of commercial property. The gas had been turned off for several months because he owed the company $3,200, and they wouldn't turn it on until he paid it. When he went to pay it, he took $2,700 with him because he had a $500 deposit with the company.
But the Equitable Gas?
It wasn't Equitable. I think it was Columbia. I'm not sure.
Well, what do you mean he had a $500 deposit?
Everybody has to put up a deposit with the gas company as against an unpaid bill.
Oh, I see.
So he had a $500 deposit, and he subtracted that from the $32 he owed.
Mm-hmm.
And they gratefully accepted the payment. But they would not turn the gas on without a $1,400 deposit.
Oh, dear. Oh, my.
Well, I negotiated that for him. Look, I couldn't get it reduced, I couldn't get it forgiven, but I did make arrangements for him to pay it in 3 monthly installments. So I spoke to him later, of course, several times, and I explained how it was to be done. He had to pay $500 1 month with the current gas bill, and the second month he was to pay $500 and the current gas bill.
Mm-hmm.
The third month, he was to pay the $400 and the current gas bill. So he says, there were calls back and forth, and he finally said to me, I'm so thankful, what can I do for you? And I said to him, you can stay out of trouble.
Good advice,
Pam. Very good advice. So Call for Action is your primary community activity.
I go every week, yes. And I have, and this is my 12th year.
12, yeah, that's
yeah.
important. 12
mm-hmm.
years in service. That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Did you not used to read to the blind?
I still do.
You still do. Tell us about that.
Well, that's rather new with me. Years ago, I used to do volunteer secretarial work at the School for Blind Children with the social service director there, who died since many years ago, actually. And in the last few years, I try to go one morning a week to read to the assistant. Let's see, what is his title? He's the assistant supervisor at the Bureau for the Visually Handicapped, which is a state office.
Where is that?
Well, his office is in the Kossman Building. We used to be in the state office building, but it got too crowded and we moved over to the Kossman Building.
So where do you read to him?
In his office.
In the Kossman Building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how long are those sessions?
Well, I'm usually there by 9:30, 20 minutes to 10, and we leave at 12 o'clock.
What do you read?
Well, he handles a lot of cases. We read the information about the cases, and he makes...
What is his profession?
I think he's a social worker by training.
In his profession, he would have to be if he's... Can we just...
I love it when... No, excuse me.
That's all right. We're almost at the end of our hour here, and we would like very much to conclude, perhaps, with your reading to this blind man, and we can pick up the next time.
We go over his cases. Some of them need changing in dispositions, and we authorize expenditures or disapprove expenditures. And he gets a lot of literature that's important to him. We read that to him as time allows. We do our work first. He has to okay the expense accounts and the transfer from investigation, as they call it, to casework, etc., etc. Well, there's lots to do.
Indeed. So how long do you read to him? You go once a week and you read for how long?
About 2.5 hours.
About 2.5 hours of time. Is that satisfying to you?
Yes, very. Because he's a most unusual man.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about
him. Well, he's handsome, for one thing. Mm-hmm. And doesn't have a lot of the characteristics that blind people often have. If you were to look at him, you would never suspect that he's blind. His eyes are quite normal looking, but very blue and very attractive. And he's very, very bright.
Is he yet married?
Yes, I think. I'm not sure about his marriage, but I think he married a woman with children. And she seems to take awfully good care of him. He comes to work beautifully coordinated in every way.
Right. His clothing, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine.
And it seems to be quite satisfactory, yes.
Fanny, before we finish off our first session with you, in going back over reviewing any of your childhood experiences in your past, is there anything that comes to mind that you'd like to tell us about, that you'd like to elaborate on?
I...